Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the New Hollywood Podcast. I am Dino Ray Ramos, and I am sitting here with the one and only.
The one and only.
The one and only.
That's nice. I love being the one and only. Amanda and Duca.
I'm pretty sure you're probably the one and only Amanda and Duca.
Definitely not the one and only Amanda.
I'm the one and only Dino Ray Ramos. But anyways, on this episode, we have the wonderful, talented Lena Waithe, co-creator of The Chi, star Emmy winner, mm-hmm. Emmy winning writer of Master of None.
Not record breaking.
Oh, she was the first female of color.
First black female to win an
Emmy
for comedy writing.
Yeah.
And then she also has the 20s, the pilot that TBS just picked up.
And she's going to be in Ready Player One.
Yeah.
She's in everything. We talk about all of that.
Yeah.
We talk about The Chi and her experiences as a queer woman of color. And she talks about the word queer and how it's kind of been reclaimed because it used to have a horrible stigma, but now it's kind of reclaimed and it's okay to use in the right context.
Exactly.
So without further ado, here is Lena Waithe.
So Lena, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy to have you. So just want to start off like at your beginning. So we read that you knew you wanted to be a writer at a very young age. You knew you wanted to do it as a career. Mm-hmm. What was your main inspiration to pursue that? And what kind of things did you write about at such a young age?
I wasn't really writing. So I was just writing whatever I was assigned to write at a young age. Mm-hmm. And I think I was really just inspired by the television I was watching. It was a really good time. I grew up in the 90s. My fellow artists, like Justin, Issa, mm-hmm. Donald, all these cats. I was really inspired by what was happening. You know, I think like stuff like A Different World, Fresh Prince, Family Matters. There was a lot of black faces on television. And I just really felt that was all I ever knew. It wasn't as if this was like a new thing or a new wave. I got to see people that looked like me on TV a ton. And I think that really made me so happy and it gave me something to dream about and something to think about. And so I think I was just inspired by that. And as I got older, it kind of came together a little bit more, but I just knew I was enamored by movies and TV and mm-hmm. characters and wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah. Do you remember like your first story or?
Not really.
I
can't remember the specific assignments, but I just remember loving reading mm-hmm. and expressing myself on paper. Mm-hmm. And my teachers being very encouraging and my family not making me feel weird for enjoying to read so much.
Yeah.
And at a very young age was sort of, you know, I was in like poetry competitions and things like that for being able to read well and speak publicly. And I think that kind of stuff was very helpful in sort of determining who I would be and what my strengths were.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And so when you first started in the business, how or were you even like guarded and apprehensive as a queer woman of color? And were there, I mean, there's obviously obstacles for people of color, the LGBT community mm-hmm. and women, but were there unexpected obstacles that you faced when you were starting out?
It's interesting because, and this question comes up a lot, you mm-hmm. know, about how is it different as, you know, because you're so different you're so othered. And I guess because I'm in my own skin, I just don't think about it that way. Have I had like some discriminatory experiences? Yeah, but they've not, it's come in a very interesting way. It's come when I have accomplished a thing and I've sold something and now I'm within that space and I'm feeling like I don't matter or I don't have power. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's, and maybe partly that's because I'm a woman, maybe because I'm young or whatever it may be, but it wasn't like a barrier. Mm-hmm. It actually happened once I got through the door. If that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So once I'm like, I have a thing and I'm like doing well and I'm feeling, oh, because in success, I think the machine tries to make you feel less than. Up until then, it's any man's game. And that may be a controversial thing to say, but I really believe that the industry doesn't care what you look like, who you are, where you come from. Like, if you're interesting, if you're great, if you're amazing, they want what you have. Like Jordan Peele, you know, Donald, myself, Issa, we're all Justin Simeon, we're all odd ducks. Like, mm-hmm. there's no world in which you look at us and go, yeah, those guys are gonna be, you know, the new way. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think it's because we do what we do in such a way that the industry acknowledges it, or people at large acknowledge it. I think that's also sort of part of it. Once you have an army behind you, all that matters in this town are dollars and cents.
Exactly.
You know, and I think if you look at like Ryan Coogler, like somebody might ask him, well, how is it being a brother from Oakland with nothing but a dream? Like, he may be like, I don't know. That's just who I am. That's just my experience. And because of who he is, he was able to tell the story that he told about Fruitvale Station. You know, mm-hmm. there's something in him, you know, because him and his dad watched Rocky, hence Creed, and obviously him have the opportunity to do Black Panther. It's like the sum of who we are is what makes us these great successes. So mm-hmm. I don't look at the thing, my otherness, as a hurdle, but it's a thing that helped me. I always say, like, I wouldn't be standing on the Emmy stage were I not born Black, gay, and female.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are the tools I had to work with. Like, that's my, I mean, that episode is my story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And because of my story and my family and how I came out, it became my, you know, this signature thing that people know me as. Like, I'll never be separated from that episode of television, nor would I want to. But that's what I always try to convey is, like, if I hadn't gone through that, if I hadn't been all these things and didn't have the kind of mother that I had and the coming out experience that I had and dressed the way I did and lived the way I live, I wouldn't have been able to pull from those things to write that story. So mm-hmm. I look at, like, as again, it's like I said in the speech, it's like the things that make us different really are superpowers. Yeah. It's a matter of, like, whether or not you choose to look at it that way. Because some people are in this town being like, well, I'm Black and I'm this and the industry ain't going to welcome me. It's like, no, the industry welcomes whoever is great. Now, the thing with it is, if you're a white dude, that's just okay, you know, and writes just well enough, you'll do really well. That's not most people's experience. Yeah, you got to work harder, you got to, you know, stay up later, and you got to rewrite more to make sure your stuff is phenomenal. But it's like Jordan Peele had to make Get Out, which is damn near a perfect movie, mm-hmm. in order to be where he is. There's a lot more cats that are white that have never made anything as brilliant as Get Out and got way more money in their bank account than he ever will. Mm-hmm. So that's really the issue. Yeah. But the truth is, like, you can be, you know, half Black, half Filipino with one leg and be trans and, you know, have a shaved head and a lazy eye. Mm-hmm. If you write something that people feel like they can profit from, you will be on the cover of every magazine, and, mm-hmm. and people will be trying to pretend to have a lazy eye and wishing they were biracial.
Exactly. You know, once one thing becomes cool, everything tries to, yeah, that's it's, true.
I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess that's like where appropriation comes into play.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, people, you know, they appropriate Black culture or absolutely. Asian culture, and then they claim it as their own, and then because... Hey, we're fun. People of color have energy.
I know.
They're fun.
It's true. Yeah. It's like the last thing I would want to be right now is straight or white.
Yeah. I always say that too. Like, this is the best time to be a person of color, a person like somebody in the marginalized community.
It's a good time to be different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's like that joke of like the hardest thing it is to be right now in Hollywood is a straight white man. But the truth is, it's like I actually do. I look at them and I go like, damn, you know what I mean? Because the truth is, when you look at the box offices of like Girls Trip and Get Out or
now,
you know, Black Panther.
Yeah.
The truth is, like, we work in a business of copycats. You know, every studio is sitting around a conference table just like this, mm-hmm. saying, where's our Black Panther?
Exactly.
Where's our Get Out? Exactly. Where's our Moonlight? You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And I think that's a good thing. But I do think it's the pendulum swinging one way, and eventually it'll swing back. My hope is it just kind of eventually balances out, and then we all get the opportunity to make the stories we want to make.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And so just back to like being the other, in a lot of your interviews, you refer to yourself as a queer woman of color. Mm-hmm. And I know for me, I used to think that saying queer had like a negative connotation to it. Mm-hmm. And so I would try to avoid saying it. For you, why is it important to use that term? And has that, I mean, there was a point where it had a negative connotation attached to it. Mm-hmm. How have you kind of used your platform to change that mindset?
Well, I mean, I think for me, my platform is one of just honesty and truth. I try to tell whatever the truth is for me. But the reason why I use that word queer is because the LGBTQIA community is made up of just that, very many different sections and different groups of people. And so what I don't like to do is ever separate myself from, say, the trans community, gay men, people who are asexual, people who are intersex. Like, to me, I feel like we're all a part of the same family. So when I call myself queer, it's me saying that we're all fighting the same fight, mm-hmm. versus saying I'm lesbian, which puts me into a group of women, mm-hmm. that says, like, yeah, we're a part of a community, but this is our corner. Mm-hmm. And I think that I feel like there needs to be LGBTQIA unity where, you know, because I do still think there's a caste system, you know, and I think that for particularly if you're asexual, if you're intersex, if you're non-binary, that you are a little bit more, you're more marginalized. Being, you know, to be a white gay man is like there's a level of privilege that goes with that. Being a lesbian white woman, there's a level of privilege that goes with that. Being a lesbian black woman is a different experience. Being a trans person of color is different. Being a non-binary person of color is different. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like ultimately there's so many different sections and groups. And that's cool, and everybody can identify as they choose. Mm-hmm. But for me, I like to think of us as one big community, and I don't want to separate myself from any group. So that's why I use queer, just because it's a really nice word that I think we've reclaimed, and also it's a really nice umbrella that we all can stand under.
Yeah.
That's a good answer.
I mean, reclaiming. Yeah. I like that. I just love that phrase.
Yeah, reclaiming time. No, because I remember I wrote queer person of color in an article once, and I got a lot of comments from people saying, you shouldn't use that word, you shouldn't use that word. But I was like, but it's kind of ours now, or it's like, we're kind of taking it back right now. Yeah. Going back to, again, the Thanksgiving episode, I can't congratulate you enough on that.
Thank you so much.
I cried a lot in that episode.
Me too.
Of course you won an Emmy for it, and it's very personal to you. And you touched on this, but how is it like to even see your story on such a big platform and people coming up to you like myself, or like not even like just queer people, but like just people just coming up to you and saying, oh my God, I connected to that story, whether you're straight or gay. But how was it like just telling your story, and what was that process like? You said you cried a lot, but how did you process
that?
Well,
I mean, I think for me, the process was quite easy, mm-hmm. you know, to tell it, because I have been, you know, preparing with not being aware of that, but mm-hmm. I was, every step, every moment, every job, every experience was prepping me in order to do that. And I did it quickly. I mean, I was filming Ready Player One at the time. Aziz came out to London. I had like 3 days off and to work on it. And Aziz and I had been working on the outline, kicking that back and forth via email. And when he came out there, like we knocked it out in like 3 days. Mm-hmm. And so it actually was quite painless, because I've been so far removed from it, and I was able to, there's no story I know better than that one. Ma. I'm gay.
You what?
I'm gay. I've always been gay. But I'm still the same person. I'm still your daughter. Nothing's changed.
Me being gay is like tarnishing her trophy. Some black people think being gay is the choice. And when they find out that their kid is gay, they try to figure out what they did wrong.
I don't want life to be hard for you. It is hard enough being a black woman in this world. Now you want to add something else to that.
It's not like this was my choice.
But also, too, I never had any intentions on telling it. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't,
because I read you weren't intending to act at the beginning, right? Like, you...
No. Okay. Like, the acting thing was something that came organically, mostly due to really amazing and awesome casting directors, mm-hmm. A la Allison Jones, Ellen Lewis, Leslie Feldman, people that really saw something in me and said, you should be in front of the camera. But I told that story to Alan and Aziz, not thinking anything of it. And then they were like, no, that's an episode. And I was like, okay, great. We all written the script. That's cool. And they were like, no, we need your voice. Yeah. Like, there are things that we can't capture and get right. Mm-hmm. So I'm really grateful to them for pushing me, because I honestly didn't feel like I needed to do it, because I felt like I trusted them enough in order to write my voice and to retell a story that I told them. And I just was so busy, and I didn't want to mess it up, and I had so much on my plate. But I think, God only gives you as much as you can handle, and mm-hmm. I'm really grateful that, we juggled a lot. I mean, literally in the same year, I was working on The Chi, trying to get it greenlit. Like, The Chi didn't get greenlit until the second to last day of filming on Ready Player One. Mm-hmm. I wrote the Thanksgiving episode while filming Ready Player One, Ready Player One is, in itself was, that was my first feature that I'd ever done, my first time in London.
Spielberg, like, what the hell? Exactly. That's your first feature.
That's like an epic, that's just like an
Shit.
Epic.
Yeah.
Like 4 months of, training and learning how to do certain things and doing motion capture, which I obviously had never done before. So I think for me, that year was just really empowering. It was there's nothing I can't get done, nothing I can't do.
When was that? Like 2015?
Had to have been, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, that was a busy year for
that
you.
Was
and
busy
it's
year.
Paying off.
Right.
Yeah.
So going back to The Chi, we've seen the first couple of episodes, and it's definitely it definitely has a different flavor to the other. Dick Wolf has that whole Chicago right. series out on NBC. But for you, what did you want people to get out of your version of Chicago that maybe they wouldn't be able to see in the other versions that have been?
Well, I don't necessarily think those other Chicago shows that are on NBC are meant to educate people about the city.
Yeah.
I think it's purely entertainment. And so I don't look at it like, oh, he's not getting it right. I think they're just, that happens to be the setting.
Yeah.
But for me, Chicago's more than a setting. It's a character, it's a feeling, it's a vibe, it's a look, it's a sound, and it's an emotion, really. And so I kind of really wanted to show the humanity of the people. I wanted to show the specifics, I wanted to get in there, and the thing people kind of hit me up about sometimes, they're like, yeah, it's supposed to take place on the south side, but you guys shoot on the west side. It's like, yeah, because it shot up so much, excuse the pun,
mm-hmm.
but it's just like, we were trying to find places that you haven't seen a million times on TV, and that's mm-hmm. not easy to do, because Empire Films there too, they shoot Chicago for New York, but so we were just always trying to find corners of the city that people just wouldn't ordinarily see,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, for me, it's more about, it's a love letter to the city, and it's the first season, so we were really trying to figure out the tone, the voice. But the truth is, it's the pacing is not this super quick, fast thing. It's you really do get invested in the characters.
Mm-hmm.
But the cool thing, which I think we've done now that I've kind of stood back from it a little bit, is that we've sort of created this sort of hypnotizing sort of thing where you can't just have it on in the background. It's like a thing.
Even though
there's not bullets flying everywhere every 2 seconds, but it's so human, and that was always my mission. And I'm really grateful to Showtime for being patient with me and really hearing me out,
mm-hmm.
because what I really wanted to do was to make it feel like a slice of life or almost cinema verite, and I think we've definitely gotten to that place with the show.
Good morning. I need to make a correction, because it says here in the program that Charles Frederick Johnson was survived by his mother and older half-brother. It's true, we had different fathers, but I loved him with my whole body. So I don't see how he could have been my half-brother. We shared everything. We shared a room. He got on my whole nerves. and I loved him. And I just don't know how to say goodbye. I ain't even ready for this shit. This shit don't even feel real. I'm sorry for cursing, but... Man, Coogie was just so much better than me, you know? Smart, charming, funny. And he'll kill me if I told y'all this, but he a virgin. Don't laugh, we shouldn't laugh, because it's sad that we live in a world where being a 16-year-old virgin is funny.
What kind of response have you gotten from Chicago natives?
Oh, man, like, they hit me up all the time. Like, I'm grateful that they hit me, you know, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. And because the truth is, even though, yes, I want everybody to like it, I care most about them. And I care a lot about Black people, you know. It's like, that's who I really want to respond to the material. And people have hit me up so much and said, like, yo, like, you really are showing Chicago for what it is. And I'm very critical of my own work and of myself and how I do things. And even though it was the first season, I was still hard on it. Like, I was like, oh, we could have did this better. This could have been stronger. I wanted more.
That's
of that.
What a first season is. Like, yeah, you know, exactly. That's the time you make adjustments and you learn from whatever.
It's
mistake.
Trial and error.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
So there was things that I was sort of seeing, but like, people don't eat, like, it's so clear now that like, that's just me being a very perfectionist.
Yeah.
But people have been like, yo, man, you really are showing us for who we are, and we've never seen ourselves in this way. And they'll hit me, they'll be like, yo, like, that's on the South Side, or like, can we see more of this character?
Oh, cool.
But I'll be like, cool. I'm like, I got you. And that's why I really do want to hear from them. And that's really a part of, I think, I hope, my brand is that I'm very communicative. I'm very, you know, responsive to people, because I don't ever want to be someone that's standing under a tent and you can't, you know, you can't have access to me, because the minute that happens, the work suffers. So I got to be careful. I got to obviously set boundaries.
Yeah, exactly.
But for me, I want to always have a conversation with those that consume my work, because if I don't, then it's just me sitting there, you know, making stuff for myself. And I don't ever want to be that kind of artist, because I would look up to artists that would be of the community, and then I see their work when they are no longer a part of the community, and I feel the difference. And so for me, it's about how can I constantly be in the community. And I know that's always a little difficult sometimes, because people, that is just the way society works. They kind of feel like, well, no, like, you're on TV, or you have a TV show, and I get that, but I'm always trying to remind them. I'm like, yeah, but we all fighting the same fight. You know, we all wake up every day, put our pants on one leg at a time. So it's just, that's just a constant thing I'm always reminding folks of.
Yeah.
Your production company is called Hillman Grad Productions.
Correct.
We're assuming that's Hillman. Is that a nod to the different world?
You assume correct.
We were like, is it? Well, it has to be.
I assume. I was like, Hillman, there's nothing else called Hillman. And like, so, it's made up.
We were going to ask, if you were to do a reboot of A Different World.
Interesting. Which I'm anti.
Yeah.
I mean, but you know, it's like, this is like the era of reboots and remakes and stuff. So but I wouldn't be surprised.
If someone threw a bunch of money at you, they're like, Alina, you got to create this. Do it now.
I would give it back.
Who would you cast as Whitley and Blaine?
Oh, I gotta recast that?
Yeah.
That is already a recipe for disaster. Okay, well, I mean,
not really.
Because that's the interesting thing, because like, that's about these reboot. It's like the same people, whether it's Will and Grace, Roseanne,
that's
or whatever.
True,
and so it's just like, they're like, hey, like,
what if like
we've gotten
Whitley
older, but
Dwayne,
like maybe like a version of
their
Whitney.
Kids.
And
okay.
And
I like the idea of Zendaya.
Oh, that's a good
I'm
one.
I'm here
I
for
didn't
that.
Even think of Zendaya.
Okay,
that's
I like
a good
Zendaya,
one.
Zendaya, and then. In terms of the kid, like if they had a son.
Or just like a different version. Like
here's the funny thing. And this is I don't know if y'all watch RuPaul's Drag Race.
Don't even get him started, please.
I'm a part of a fantasy league.
Okay.
Last night, I did not agree.
Wow.
We'll talk later.
I haven't seen last night yet. But here's the thing. And I have a bias. I'll own it. If people really follow me, they know this. But I'm very close friends with Shangela, a.k.a. DJ. So he's been my friend for like so many years. He was with me way way back before, you know, we both, when we were shooting in the gym. So, but here's the thing I always tease him about. I always say he looks like he could be Jasmine Guy's like gay son.
Like, you're kind of right.
It's like, it's super, and I always tease him about it. And he's all like, you know what? Okay, cool. You know, Shangela. He's like, well, hallelujah. Come on, hallelujah. Hallelujah, Hillman. So I would love to give them like a daughter like Zendaya and then a gay ass like son who's like cross dressing.
I would so be here for that.
Come on, man. And like watching Dwayne like deal with that and what that
is.
That's a good friend. They're both light skinned kids, but whatever. Maybe Whitney's jeans are strong.
Probably, yeah.
But I just really, if people listen, if you really like do it, like hold up a picture. You could either do it with him in drag or not.
Yeah.
But and then look at Jasmine Guy. Like, they freaking look alike.
Non-drag interviews in RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, right, exactly.
Yeah.
Come on. Like, they may be related. I don't know. But I always tease him about that.
Oh my God.
So that's my
specific answer.
You just made his day.
Yeah. You know, I'm watching again because obviously he's back.
Is there a movie or TV show that people would be surprised that you are obsessed with?
Here's the interesting thing. I don't think people should be surprised. I just like good shit. Mm-hmm. But they might be surprised that I'm obsessed with Better Things. So people might be surprised by that. Mm-hmm. But if you know me, you aren't. Because you're it's like it's a gut-wrenching, human, funny, just surprising show.
I'm going to put that on my list.
It should be. Like, every chance I get.
She's so talented.
She's phenomenal. And she's, like, my homie now, too. Mm-hmm. She interviewed me for Interview Magazine. And then, and obviously, like, we bonded while having that conversation. Mm-hmm. And then and she asked me, and then we met at the Golden Globes on the red carpet. She had just watched The Chi because she was prepping for the interview, and she really loved it. And I was like, well, I love your show. Like, you're amazing. And we had a whole love fest. And then she hit me up and was like, hey, you want to come to the Atlanta premiere with me? I was like, yes, I would. And so we went it was we had the best time. Nice. It was great.
I just watched Atlanta last night.
The first three episodes. Oh, y'all saw more than me. I'm obsessed.
Yeah.
That first episode.
Phenomenal. It's hard talking to people about because they're like, I'm like, it's darker, and but it's interesting.
It's so super surreal. It's so
it
weird.
Is.
Yes.
It's phenomenal.
And it's still funny. Okay. And then you're also prepping another show. The 20s for TBS. Congrats to that.
Thank you.
I watched
Pilot presentation where I pretty much took four scenes from the then pilot. The pilot has changed a lot since then, but the characters are the same, all that kind of stuff. But Justin sent me in because we had such great success with our concept trailer for Dear White People that he was like, you should do like a pilot presentation for 20s. And obviously he directed it and we got it up and, you know, it just really sort of took on a life of its own. I think that's where we really found, oh, we got something here. And we've been, you know, jumping around from BET. We were at Hulu for a bit. And now we found our third time's a charm. And TBS really gets it. And they really appreciate my voice. And so, you know, hopefully we get Justin to come and direct the pilot. I want Carmen Cuba, who cast The Chi, to cast this.
She does a lot of Netflix shows, right?
She does. She won an Emmy for casting Stranger Things.
She did.
And she also cast a really great show called The Nick that was a little short-lived on Stars. But she... I think it was Cinemax, sorry. But she's phenomenal. And so that's the thing. I'm sort of like building my team and my crew. And I really want to knock that one out of the parks when we get a series order.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wanted to ask you. So in the pilot presentation, Hattie, who's the main character, is doing her spiel on her YouTube channel. Yep. And she says, when it comes to The Wiz and The Wizard of Oz, I prefer the white one. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really funny.
Thank you.
Anyways, I wanted to ask you, when it comes to
That joke is no longer because, the pilot, but hopefully we'll figure out
Well, I mean, and also the kids in The Shire are doing The Wiz. Wiz. Yeah.
Right.
So when it comes to The Wiz or The Wizard of Oz, which one do you prefer?
Oh, I definitely prefer The Wizard of Oz.
Well, but, there are some good songs in The Wiz, though. Yeah. I love Home.
Right. Yeah. Oh, of course. I love Whitney Houston's rendition of Home. On Merv Griffin show. But I think I wanted to, it's interesting because initially they were going to go to a dance and you kind of have the similar beats with Andrea and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And Rick Famuyiwa, my incomparable director and EP of the show as well, he was like, yo, Lena, like, we've seen the dance thing before because he obviously directed The Wood, and that's sort of a similar thing. So mm-hmm. he's like, what can we do that's different, that's fun and childlike and like still like really black and cool? And I was like, oh, well, maybe we could do a school play, because he was also asking me. He's like, well, what's some things you did? And mm-hmm. I was like, well, my mom did put me in like a little summer camp that was like for artsy kids, and like so I did like plays and stuff. He's like, that's dope. And then we were like, what could the play be? And I was like, well, you don't get no more blacker than The Wiz.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Rick and I really kind of just sort of like went back and forth on that, and then I went just back in and play with it. And mm-hmm. I think it really is one of those things that I'm such a great note from him. And obviously we carry that out throughout the whole season, yeah, and yeah. we'll kind of see some stuff at the finale.
So our final question, we ask this to all our guests. Is there an underrepresented person in the industry, whether it be an actor, producer, storyteller, creator, not in the mainstream, who you think we need to look out for, people need to look out for, and deserves more recognition?
Well, it's interesting. I'm working with that person now. I'm okay. trying to make yeah. a TV show for her. Kim Whitley, okay. you know, who plays my aunt in the Thanksgiving episode.
Oh, yeah.
And she's had some bit parts here and there, and she obviously has an infamous episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She was in Next Friday. She's just dope, and I kind of put Alan Yang on her to her. I think she's gonna pop up in his new Amazon show, but she's just phenomenal, and she's a real talent, and I don't think the industry really knew what to do with her. Mm-hmm. And I'm also a person that believes, like, just because she's like, you know, I don't think the new wave has to necessarily be this like 20 something mm-hmm. or preteen, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah,
person. And so I feel like she's been in the game for a long time. She just left me a really funny voicemail, because if people are paying attention, when you listen to an AT&T commercial, you may hear a familiar Everybody. Voice, which is yours truly. And she called me and said, why are you out here sounding like me on this AT&T? And I was like, what? And she's like, I haven't called her back yet. I'm going to. But she's like, yeah. Some people hit me up, texted me, said, congrats, girl, on AT&T commercial. She's like, uh-huh, you sound like me. You old thieving ass. Like, she's like, you know, so.
Y'all do kind of sound like that. I never like, thought just, of that
until, yeah, yeah. like, I got her voicemail. But I think she's a star. I think she's special. I think she has such a unique story, you know, with the way her son, her adopted
yeah,
son came into her life.
Yeah, I saw her reality show.
Yeah, exactly. Raising yeah. Whitley, which yeah, you used yeah. to be on. And so, like, I think, well, obviously, I mean, anytime Oprah can see how great you are, yeah.
then you're Midas touch.
You got something. So I'm just trying to follow behind Oprah. The difference is, I want, obviously, because my lane is writing, and I want to just sort of be able to be the Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis to her Janet Jackson.
Oh, I love Ooh. That. I love that yeah. analogy.
It's a great way yes. to end this.
Yeah. Well, so, Lena,
Kim Whitley, ladies and gentlemen.
Kim Whitley, I love, she, yeah, I remember seeing, she hosted, like, this award ceremony that I saw, and I just love her, and I love her. And yeah, she is.
She's great.
Well, Lena, you are phenomenal.
Thank you so you much for
so
doing
much.
This.
You're in Master of None. You're in the. You created The Shy, Ready Player One. You were in This Is Us. You are in
oh
every.
Oh my! You were, and I. Oh,
you just
dope.
Popped up, yeah. and also
I know.
I was like, wait,
I know. Just out here, man.
Yeah. Working.
And
working.
You got to work with those cute dogs.
I know.
But. Thank you for
Thank
coming
you so
on
much
the
for
New
doing
Hollywood
this.
Podcast.
Thank
you're welcome anytime.
It yeah, means a lot.
Yeah, and we yeah. can't wait to see what you're doing in yeah. the future.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Your millions of projects.
I know. Right? We got stuff coming, man.
Yeah, yeah. keep it coming.
Yeah, we're
keep
here for it.
Exactly. Thank you.
And we'll see you at RuPaul's Drag Race.
I know, right? Root it. Let's root for Shangela. Team Hallelujah.